Well, it's the top 10.
Yeah.
From
10 of my
3 years ago?
Yeah, 3 years ago. April of 21. Yeah, that's a long time ago.
So
10 of my favorite most watched movies of all time.
If you listen to part one of this podcast last week, we put up a podcast we did 3 years ago, right at the end, or I guess not the end, but when the vaccinations came out and we all got vaccinated and Matt came over, first time we did a podcast in person for a year, maybe more.
Mm-hmm. Probably
long
more.
Time. Yeah. So we did a Bond ranking episode. We thought it would be fun to go back, put this out there, kind of have some reflection on our choices. We're going through all the Bonds again, but we're taking them a movie at a time this time.
Yeah, we're going to do a full breakdown of each movie like we do normally. Mm-hmm. When we did this originally, we mentioned in the first episode.
We grouped them all in.
Yeah, it was just, and it was too much, and I'm sure it was really fun. They made for fun nights, and probably...
Especially when we're stuck in our house doing nothing.
Exactly, we had nothing to do, but I'm pretty sure they played this in Abu Ghraib for torture, like, because I can only imagine listening to us talk about Bond for like 4 straight hours while drinking had to be a little rough.
True.
Got an Abu Ghraib reference. Dating myself.
So this is our top 10. After we do all these, we'll probably do another ranking episode and we'll fit No Time to Die in here somewhere. This is before No Time to Die.
Yeah, I mean, well, by the time we get to No Time to Die, it's, you know, we can bend the rules. We might as well just do No Time to Die.
Yeah, like our first run here is going to be the first four Connerys.
Yep.
The second run will be the one he left, the George Lazenby one, and the one he came back.
Yes.
That'll be a second run. And then we'll split up the Moores, probably like, I don't know, the 70s. We'll take up a little bit of a break. Then we'll do his 80s, like something like that.
I think that probably makes the most sense because like the 70s are very distinct, and then you have three in the 80s, kind of perfect.
Yeah.
We've already done the Timothy Daltons, which is a little weird, but we'll cover that when we get there. We'll talk about it briefly.
But it'll be week by week. And like you said, one movie at a time. We're not bunching these all in. Yeah. And then, you know, I kind of want to give a little more attention to the Roger Moore films. Admittedly, I think it was a culture shock for me to go from the Connery films to the tone that Roger Moore sets, especially in Live and Let Die.
Well, that's fair because going from Diamonds Are Forever to Live and Let Die, not too crazy. But going from like Thunderball to Live and Let Die, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's the thing. Like when Connery left and then you had this great George Lazenby movie, Honor Majesty's Secret Service. He is not a strong actor, but the movie is very strong.
The movie's very good. Yeah.
And then he comes back and they do this, is like kind of set the stage, I guess, for the tone they were going for.
Oh, yeah.
But Roger Moore is just so completely different from Sean Connery. And it's not that I didn't like any of the Moore films, because some of them are, you'll see here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so different for me.
Yeah, and I also think you really, when we did this originally, you had seen the Pierce Brosnan films and the Daniel Craig films.
Yes.
You hadn't really seen any of the earlier ones, right?
Or no, hardly any. None of them.
And you really fell for Connery pretty quickly. You said, hey, this is still great. This holds up.
I really liked the Timothy Dalton film. Well, I take that back. I liked one of his movies a lot, which you'll see pretty high on this list.
But we started with the Connery ones, and you were like, oh, this is great. This is really, I really like this a lot.
He is the best James Bond.
100%. And then I can totally understand, if you haven't been around all of them a lot, why you would go from Connery to Roger Moore and go like, whoa, what's this?
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
I've had the benefit of, these movies are part of my DNA. If you cut me open, I actually bleed James Bond scripts.
Indeed.
So to me, it's just like, oh, that's the Roger Moore era. I don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
But I can understand why it would be a little bit shocking.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it because one thing we didn't get to do at the time was go into the backstory, the production, things that we do now.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about Bond films is there is so much interesting behind the scenes stuff to talk about. Stunts, dangerous things, production fights, etc.
Well, that's what I'm looking forward to. Like you said, a deeper dive into each one of these movies, and it deserves, each one of these really deserves its spotlight.
I agree.
You know, so without further ado, this is our top 10 from 2021.
We're in the top 10 now, my friend. This is where things, this is, top 10. So from here on, this is God tier Bond.
Everything at this point is amazing.
Yeah.
And with the exception of my top one or two, all of these could probably flip-flop, you know, on a given day. And my number 10 might even be a little low compared to how you have yours. But my number 10 is
License to Kill, which I friggin' love. I love this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's only my number 10 because the first, it's kind of the inverse of The Living Daylights for me. The first half of this is a little lackluster. It's a little Miami Vice. Mm. The opening
Miami Vice.
Well, no, I know. But I've heard, and it's like, it's...
You're like, yeah, so does my mom.
It's a, it, I did not say that. First of all, my mom is actually too old for Miami Vice. Mom, don't listen. But it's a little Miami Vice, a little 80s. Like, Bond shouldn't be influenced this much by pop culture. But once they get down to, I think it's Isthmus, but it's really Panama. Like, once they get down to Panama City and square off, like, it gets a lot better. So that's where the film really picks up for me. I adore it. And the opening scene is fantastic. When they're fighting Sanchez and they pull him up, they pull up the helicopter with a plane, something that was totally ripped off by Christopher Nolan in one of the Batman movies. That's amazing. Then it gets a little weird. It gets a little Miami Vice-y, but then it gets excellent.
Yeah.
And the movie is mostly just Bond outwitting the villain, which I love.
Okay. So we're in the top 10. Yes. Like I said, these are all God-tier Bond films as far as I'm concerned. So I've got For Your Eyes Only at number 10.
It's a great number 10.
This is my favorite Roger Moore film by far. It gets back to basics. It's a very personal tale. There's a bait and switch with the villain. There's a very intense, like... We always joke about these easily escapable situations, but this was not one of those.
Oh, the shark bait being dragged along the boat.
Yeah, exactly.
The keel holing.
You're wondering, like, how the fuck is he going to get out of this, you know?
Yeah.
A more serious tone for the Roger Moore films, I would say. I really liked this movie a lot. I thought it was fantastic. And then, of course, again, the title song, great. For Your Eyes Only.
Super iconic.
Sean Easton, yeah. Fantastic song. I really enjoyed this movie. It's one of the only Roger movies that, you know, I could probably watch again and again and again.
That's fair. It's a great number 10. Number 9 for me. Okay. So this is one of those that I feel like should be higher, but it's not. Skyfall. This is a great film. It is.
Uh-huh.
It's the best Batman movie that James Bond ever made. And that's sort of my issue with it. It is fantastic. And every time I watch it, I enjoy it more. When I saw this in the theaters in 2012, you know, I was fully steeped in Bond at this point. I'd been 4 years since Quantum. And I honestly didn't really like it that much. I thought it was okay. And every time I've watched it since then, it's grown on me a little bit more. And I know people love it. A lot of people rank it as their number one. It's a beautiful film. The cinematography is gorgeous. I love Silva. I love Daniel Craig's performance. Maybe I should rank this higher. I don't know. But at this point, you're competing against classics. That's the thing for me.
Sure.
So I love Skyfall. But in terms of the classics, which I do put Skyfall in the rank of classics, it's not something I'm going to go back to. There's a lot I'm going to go back to more than Skyfall.
Mm.
That's the thing. Mm. I feel like it's my number 9. It's super high, and I feel like I'm like dragging it, and I'm not. It's an amazing.
See, I told
it's
you.
It's an amazing film. Yeah, it's really hard, right? Like it's tough. It's a fantastic.
Well, you specifically said that you enjoyed your least favorite.
Oh, for sure. I love all these movies. Like, Skyfall, like, I could watch Skyfall right now and I would be like you said, happy as a clam.
We're in top 10. This is like...
This is hard.
Yeah. This is the best of the best.
And also, there are some... Ahead of this is some, like, legitimately classic films. Not just in Bond, but, like, in cinema.
Yeah.
So, this is tough. I adore Skyfall, but it's maybe a little bit lower than some other people would rank it.
But let's discuss the song.
Adele. I was supposed to play Bond music in the background. I mean, and didn't fucking do it.
It's great.
Yes.
It's wonderful. I like Adele. Actually, I'm just an Adele fan, just in general. I think she wrote the perfect...
This is a great song.
...classic Bond theme for the... It was 2012, so for the 2000s. Yeah, and she nailed it. I'd love to have her back. I'd love to see Adele come back for one more.
Number 9, I have... on Her Majesty's Secret Service. You know, George Lazenby, not the best actor.
No.
But he did a serviceable job for the most part. I think the thing about this movie is it probably has the best Blofeld out of any of the Blofelds.
Telly Savalas is excellent.
Yes. Yeah. And it has the most impactful story in the Bond lore that you're ever going to get. Bond, you know, and you believe that Bond falls in love with this woman, which you don't believe in Spectre
right.
at all. But you believe it in this. And she's not a like a useless, like, you know, beautiful face that's just in this movie because she's hot. Like, she's actually useful in the film. She bails Bond out at one point. There's a great, like, yes, the technology of the time is kind of lame, but it's a great, like, finish to the film. And then they get married, and, like, it's fucking shocking how this movie ends. So they're, yeah. like, going down the road, just married. He pulls over to the side of the road to, like, take a look at the ocean. And Blofeld drives by, and they fucking shoot his wife and kill her. And that's how the movie ends.
Isn't that specifically horrible? Because he's been a womanizer from the very beginning.
Correct.
And finally he marries somebody.
Right.
And so you have all of this hope and love, and you're... I mean, if you're a fan, you've seen all of these empty relationships, let's call them, but they weren't really relationships, right? And so he's married now. And then she dies.
Yes.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and this is the one part where like Lazenby kills it.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, don't worry, darling. We've got all the time in the world. And he's like, legitimately crying. And then you find out that he's such a shit actor. The actress that was opposite of him, the woman that just got killed,
Diana Rigg,
was pinching his thigh hard as she can.
She was biting his leg.
Yeah.
Because her head was in his lap, so she was biting his thigh.
To get legitimate like tears so out of him.
Yeah, because she was like, you're not a good actor.
Right.
So we'll just, I'll do this for you.
So she, and then, you know, Lazenby fucked up.
And Diana Rigg was like a pro's pro. So.
There's a big controversy behind this, but he was like, I'm better than this. Like, I need more money, blah, blah, blah. So they said, fuck you. And they got Connery back for Diamonds Are Forever.
Lazenby had famously the most awful advice in the history of film. His manager said, hey man, it's 1969, Summer of Love. James Bond is passe. It's never going to last. Don't sign on for that big contract. And he was like, okay.
Well, and then you said he showed up to the premiere like a hippie.
He showed up looking like a hippie. He had a big long beard, scraggly. And the producers called him. And they were like, hey, like, Bond doesn't have a beard. Can you show up trying to promote this movie looking like James Bond? We paid you a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah, the irony of this whole thing... By the way, number 8 for me on Her Majesty's Secret Service. We can just keep this conversation going. It's a great film. It really is.
It is.
I think Lazenby is serviceable in the role. He's okay. He's good.
If Connery was in this movie, and I'm not, like, we talked about this too, I'm not sure if he would have been able to deliver the emotion at the end of the film.
I don't think so either. I think this is one of those weird films where you needed, it's one of those, like, lightning in the bottle films where you needed an inexperienced actor, or just not Connery, to do the emotion of the movie. Because Connery could not be vulnerable. He could not show emotion.
But do you think that if he were in this movie and he... So all this time he was not vulnerable. He was very stoic through... And that's one thing that I did notice. But what if he was in this movie and he was vulnerable? Wouldn't that just blow your mind?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he could pull it off. I think if you put Sean in On Her Majesty's, it would be... Like, everybody says, like, oh, if you put Sean in On Her Majesty's, it would be... It's, like, the greatest thing ever. The problem with Majesty's is... And maybe this was a product of George being there. Maybe if Sean was there, it would be a different film. But it feels like it's a film completely outside of the James Bond universe. It feels like a one-off.
It's very true to the book, though, correct?
Extremely. And that's what makes it such a one-off, because it doesn't follow the chronology of the previous films, because when Peter Hunt that was the director, when he shot it, he said he wanted to just produce the most authentic book-to-screen Bond experience ever. And so it sort of feels like this movie that exists outside of the James Bond universe, but it is a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Maybe Sean could have been like, oh, yeah, like I'm a womanizer and now I'm settling down. Perhaps. We don't know. I think the youth of George, the inexperience of George, and the fact that he's not Sean really lent itself to you feeling his emotion.
Well, I guess the argument can be made the other direction, where you've seen Connery now through five of these films, mm-hmm. and like Emma said, he's been a womanizer this entire time. If you can get that out of him, that yeah. you're really taking the audience on a journey.
It's
character progression, like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's made me think, because you're right. Had we seen Connery all of a sudden be super vulnerable,
yeah,
maybe that would have been really interesting. Now, could Connery do that? I think at that point in his career, I think is the question. But could he, like, had he pulled it off?
Yeah.
It would have been the number one Bond film?
Yes, dude. It would have been the number one film just because of that. If everything else sucked,
yeah,
this one scene would have stuck out in your mind forever.
100%.
Yeah.
It would have been, like M said, you got five movies of Connery, like, just fucking women and not giving a shit about anything except the mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this woman who pulls him away from the job, ties a knot with him, and then she's killed in front of him at the end of the movie.
Yeah, you're like rooting for them, and you think he's going to have this wonderful life, and then she's killed.
There's no follow-up to that scene either. She gets killed, and then the credits are rolling.
See, that's the problem with this movie.
You're like in tears.
Yeah.
As it stands, my way of watching this film is you have to watch it almost as like a separate thing. You have to say, like, this is on a different timeline than other James Bond films. This is a one-off. Don't watch it in order. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Could have been interesting. Like, had Sean's heart still been in it and he made this film, it could have been, like, the greatest Bond film ever. Unfortunately, he was so checked out. It had he made it, it probably would have been a disaster. Plus, the fact that Sean is not there, I think, makes the film better. Because every other person that was involved in this film knew that Sean wasn't there. The golden goose was gone. They had to step up their game. So everything, the directing, the editing, the cinematography, the score, the writing was all just like top, like spot on, perfect.
Diana Rigg is phenomenal in this.
Diana Rigg is amazing. Like she might be the best Bond girl ever. She's so good.
Definitely.
This has my all-time favorite shot from a James Bond film, which is a weird thing, but when they're attacking Thieves Gloria in helicopters, there's just this one wide shot of three helicopters over a sunset over all the mountains, and it's just spectacularly beautiful.
Yeah.
Peter Hunt really knew how to shoot things. So again, like, I don't know, if you put Sean in this, maybe it would be amazing, maybe it wouldn't be as good. We don't know. Like, you can't play what if with history. But as it stands, it, in spite of George, I think he's okay.
It's
an amazing film.
The thing that doesn't age well is Diana Rigg's dadness.
Yeah, no.
He's just like, she needs a man to dominate her.
Yeah. He literally sets Bond up with her because she's a wild child. And he's like, I want you to just fuck my daughter into submission. And we all cringe.
What I just said is an exact quote from the movie.
Yeah.
He needs a man to dominate her.
Yeah, he says that to Bond. While she's not there, Bond is just in the room with him. And he's like, my daughter, she's crazy. She needs a man to dominate her. It's like,
Well, didn't my dad tell you that I'm crazy?
Yes, he did tell me I needed to dominate you. That's true.
Good Lord. And you know what? Maybe he said that because he would probably...
He got it from this movie.
Yeah, well, that too. But my dad would probably say, she needs a man to dominate her or else she will kick your ass.
No, but fair fucks to the directors in this. She still really does her own thing. She falls in love with Bond organically.
Yeah, she's not some like shrinking violet in this at all. She is a like, you know, it's almost like the joke to say like, oh, this Bond girl's the strong, confident woman, independent. Right. But she really is.
And
she's perfect. She might be my favorite Bond girl. She's really good.
Number eight, man.
On. I already did my number eight, Honor Majesty's Secret Service. So okay. That's why we kept that conversation going.
Number eight for me is Goldfinger.
Wow.
I love this movie.
I'm so curious about your top five.
I've seen it multiple times.
Sure.
The thing I think that brings us down just a tad is the uncomfortable rape scene in the barn.
You don't say.
Lesbian character Pussy Galore, who by the magic of the Bond dick has become straight and a hero.
Oh my gosh, I'm almost embarrassed to say where I put this film now.
The comical scene of Goldfinger getting blown out the window. Yeah. You know, but besides that, everything else in this is really fucking great. And you know, those are the only things I can really knock the film for at all. But I love those scenes. Like, you would think that a golf scene between these guys would be uninteresting, but sure. It's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Odd Job, a fantastic henchman. Bond is like a prisoner in a lot of this movie, which is kind of off-putting as well, but yeah, it's still good.
Bond doesn't do a lot in Goldfinger. That's like the knock, and I have it higher than you do, spoiler alert. But like, but still, it's a common complaint, and it's a legitimate complaint,
yeah.
Which is that Bond doesn't really do anything.
Right.
You are right about the golf scene. That golf scene reminds me of like the poker scene in Casino Royale. It should be boring, but it's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
They do a good job.
So that casino scene is the one with the lady across from him, right?
You're a bit more specific. There's like tons of casino scenes with ladies across from
him. Well, there's only one. Yeah. Like, Bond and there's ladies. A lady.
No,
there's
you're
a lady
talking about
Dr.
No.
Okay.
We'll get to Dr.
No. Oh, yeah, we're going to get Dr. No. Bond and ladies and casinos goes together.
Yeah.
Just, okay.
Yeah.
Like peanut butter and jelly.
Absolutely, 100%.
Number seven, Matt.
Number seven for me is For Your Eyes Only.
Wow.
A film I freaking love. Yeah, I just adore this movie. I always have. It's not my favorite Roger, but it's right there for all the reasons you said. It brings, after the just debacle that was Moonraker, it brings Bond back down to earth, literally and figuratively. It's just a good Cold War spy thriller. Roger's already looking older in this film, but that's okay, because in this sort of story, you can have an older spy. It's okay.
Yeah.
It works. It works really well. It blows my mind that they handled Roger's age well in For Your Eyes Only and Octopussy.
Right.
And then in A View to a Kill, they were like, never mind. Moving on. But yeah, in this, it's great. It's slow. It's boring, which I love. The climax of this film is a rock climbing scene that goes on for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is like super tense and amazing.
It is.
Yeah, it's great. I just adore it. The score is great. Bill Conti did it, the Rocky guy. It's a just wonderful movie.
Number seven for me. Again, I'm going to get shit for this from a standard Bond fan. Mm-hmm. I have From Russia With Love.
That's not that bad.
I think if they didn't have this weird gypsy scene,
okay, that's
weird. It would be higher for me. Mm-hmm. It kind of made no sense. It didn't feel like it didn't. I felt it was out of place for the rest of the movie. But a great Bond girl, a great villain, what's that guy's name?
Red Grant.
Red Grant, a fantastic villain.
Dude, maybe my all-time favorite.
A great fight scene on the train.
Yeah.
A great woman beating the scene. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean that's what I watch Bond for. So
yeah, absolutely.
Take.
We watch for the rapes.
The rapes and the woman beating. Delete that. We're getting canceled.
Yeah. It's a very interesting plot. Bond is being very spy in this. Connery's kind of coming into his own in the role. I mean, even though I thought he was, which we'll get to, he was in tune from the very beginning. Let's not bullshit here.
Yes, he was perfect from the get-go.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I enjoyed the movie. I just there's certain spots where I kind of lose interest a bit, but. I know this is Connery's favorite Bond film he ever did.
He loves it.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? We're both now in our top... We're getting to be the top six. We've been in the top 10. Clearly, we love these movies.
Yeah.
And yet, we're both, like, defending our choices for why they're not number one or something.
I know.
It's really weird. It's very strange. Yeah. Because, really, like, that's a perfectly legitimate spot to put that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, what am I?
Number six.
Number six. My number six, this one rose up for me a lot, and it happened last week. I watched this film again, and I was watching it with some people, and they were like, oh my gosh, you watch this movie a ton. And I thought, oh my goodness, I do. It's Dr. No. Number six, Dr. No. The very first Bond film.
Well, let me stop right there, because yep. I also have Dr. No number six, so let's discuss.
Sweet.
Is that the only one, maybe?
Maybe a couple we've agreed on, but
we had a couple that we were at least like very close.
Very close,
yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, but this,
I'd say for the most part, we were like really, really close.
Yeah,
yeah.
The very first Bond film sets the template. It's pretty shocking how much of the Bond template it does like right out of the gate. Yeah. Everything stuck.
Right.
It doesn't really have a theme song, but that's kind of it. It's got the Bond girl. It has terrible sexism and misogyny and racism, so that checks all the boxes.
Of course.
Yeah. but I think we're thinking the same thing. It's got a couple of scenes here that are the iconic. Best scenes in Bond.
Period.
That opening casino scene where Sean does the first Bond, James Bond, lighting a cigarette. Just the coolest shit you've ever seen. He nails the character right off the bat. The scene where he kills a man in cold blood, Professor Dent, for no reason. He just wants to kill. Incredible.
I've mentioned this before when we did this. Like, to me, this is the line that sticks out for me the entire scene, almost more than anything in any of these movies ever. And he's sitting there playing solitaire, calm as shit. The professor shoots the gun and it's just clicking. He knows he's out of bullets. And Connery, just calm as fuck, is just like, that's a Smith & Wesson professor. And you've had your six. And then just shoots him dead. Like, there's nothing. And that whole scene. And then the interaction with him and the office clerk.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. And Dr. No is an iconic villain.
Dr. No is an absolutely iconic villain.
Dr. No has like 10 minutes of screen time in this. And is still, I would say, one of the most well-known iconic villains.
Without question.
Yeah. It's just amazing how much they got right first time.
I agree.
Astounding. 1962, low budget, nailed it.
So now we're in the top five, which is like, if there is a level above heaven, this is it.
This is it. For me, I would watch these movies all on loop happily.
Yeah.
Shall I start? Because I think mine's going to be controversial for you at least.
You shall.
My number five is GoldenEye.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I know where GoldenEye
is. Discuss.
GoldenEye's great. It's a perfect Bond film. It is the perfect, if I was going to name a perfect distillation of the formula Bond films, of like, oh, we're going to do the Bond formula again. What's the perfect version of that? It's GoldenEye. A perfect reintroduction of James Bond in 95. It had been 6 years since we had last seen Bond. License to Kill wasn't, obviously, we think it's amazing, but it was not a success commercially. They had to reinvent it, or they were probably not going to be able to make more.
This is where it was tied up in court, though, too, right?
It was tied up in legal proceedings. License to Kill was not a success financially. Then they went to court over like a rights dispute. They got it all hammered out. 95. Pierce finally comes in, and I actually think Pierce waiting until 95 was the right move. I think he was the right age for Bond at this point, and it is the perfect formula Bond film. Then that's not a knock on it. Great villain, Alec Trevelyan, 006. Sean Bean, of course he dies, in a spectacular fashion. A beautiful Bond girl, great locations, great plot. It's a little, it does look a little dated now, I will say. It looks a little more dated than even some earlier ones. That sort of mid-90s thing, I don't know why, it didn't hold up super well. But that's not to take anything away from the film. It is spectacular.
Number five for me is Thunderball. Again, a lot of classic Bond fans are going to fucking hate this, but I had so much fun with this movie. I love the plot, how they've stolen nuclear weapons. They're hiding under the sea. It's a total like spy film investigation. They're trying to find this thing. I personally love the underwater scene. I love the dynamic with the Bond girl in this. I love the villain. I love the scene where he shows up late to the meeting. It's just fucking great. The rapey scene in the massage parlor.
No, it's not a massage parlor. It's not a massage parlor.
Physical therapy?
If it was a massage parlor, it would make more sense. It's the physical therapy unit. And Bond...
That does not make sense.
And Bond is straight up trying to rape this poor physical therapist who's just trying to do her job. For like hours. Yeah. Every time Bond gets near her, he's just like, drop the towel.
He's doing a little dance. He's gyrating.
he finally
he's gyrating.
Yeah, he finally coerces her into sex. This actually, like, he straight up rapes a lady in Goldfinger. This is the rapiest scene, I think. She fucks
up. He blackmails her.
She doesn't even fuck up on something. Somebody tries to kill him on her little chair station. And he's like, well, I could say something, but I won't for some sex. And then he just straight up, like, pushes her into a wall and has sex with her. That is the rapiest scene in the whole series. It is awful.
But there's so many cool scenes in this.
No, it's a great movie. I love Thunderball. It's just that scene is like, woof.
I like how he has sex with the redheaded henchwoman.
Yeah, well, that was, oh God. Okay.
And then...
We should talk about that.
She turns on him, right?
And, oh, yeah. And
she says something about, oh, was it good for you or whatever? And he's like, you think I enjoyed that? Yeah, I just did that for God and Queen.
I do that for King and
Country. Yeah, for King and Country.
That oh, we should talk about Fiona Volpe. Fiona Volpe is the most beautiful Bond girl in my estimation.
You've said that like 10 times since we've been doing this.
Yes, he has. Yeah. Every single movie.
Oh, no, I don't care. That scene with her in the bathtub triggered puberty for me.
The best part in that bathtub scene, she's in the bathtub and Connery comes in and he's just like all fucking like... just smug as fuck. And she goes,
so good.
Can you give me something to put on, please? And he throws her a little washcloth and he just sits.
And he sits down. He sits down on a chair like this, puts his legs up, and he hands her shoes.
So great.
That. Mm.
And then the henchman is about to kill him, and he's got the crossbow in his hand, and he's just like, and he shoots the guy, and it goes through the tree, and he's like, I think you got the point.
Wonderful.
Fucking great, dude.
He's with Domino in that scene.
It would be so fun.
Another 11 out of 10 beautiful Bond girl.
Yeah, she may be related to me in some way because her last name is Auger, but I digress.
You're right. Claudine Auger.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Emmett, you have to hear us grunting over how we rate the Bond girls.
We're on number four.
Number four. For me, The Spy Who Loved Me. Which I know we disagree on, but I absolutely love this movie.
No, I knew you were going to have this up there.
This is going to be high for me, obviously. Yeah. This is one of my favorites. This was the first Bond film I ever saw. I think it's perfect. It could like this movie could legitimately be my number one.
Mm-hmm.
I love it so much. It's Roger. It's silly. It's stupid. It's got Jaws. It has a...
Freshie?
Not that.
Spy Who Loved Me has a... Are you pausing?
No, keep going.
Okay. Spy Who Loved Me has a base that goes in and out of the sea. The only downside in this movie is the villain is super forgettable. I think this is Roger's best performance. I absolutely adore Barbara Bach as Agent XXX. She kind of really is Bond's equal. The car chase is fantastic. I love the Lotus Esprit. I love Jaws. I just love everything about it. The scenery, the story, it checks all the boxes for me. And again, it's my first. I'm super nostalgic for it. I was 5 years old and saw this movie, and I remember being 5 years old and seeing this movie. Yeah. And there will nothing will ever knock that great memory out of my head.
So it is not inappropriate for Aaron.
Oh no, it's super inappropriate. Look at me. Don't do that. No, don't. Wait till he's 10, I would say, is a good age.
All right. Number four. Gonna piss off a ton of Bond fans here.
I'm so excited for this.
I don't care though. So here's the thing. If you guys know me and you know some of the things I really am a sucker for is a revenge tale. And this is Bond unhinged. This is Bond on a fucking mission. This is Bond serious as shit. This is License to Kill. I loved this movie. Like, I gushed over it a ton on when we did this on podcast. Timothy Dalton, I get what you're saying with the Miami Vice, and it seems a bit off for a Bond film. The one thing that like really throws us out is the bar scene.
That's a weird scene for a Bond film.
But goddamn, dude, and the villain in this is fantastic.
Maybe my favorite villain, Fran Sanchez, is wonderful.
Yeah, and the confrontation between him and Bond when he brings him up to the office and he's talking to Bond about what he does for a living, and Bond's like, I'm in the elimination business.
I'm more of a problem eliminator.
Yeah, dude. If you see the deleted scenes from this too, I don't know why they took this out. Bond is loading his gun and smoking a cigarette when he's like watching something about this dude on TV. And it's, he kills, they brutally rape and murder Felix's wife. They paralyze Felix, or at least they fuck him up really bad. I don't know if he's paralyzed at the end or not.
He's pretty paralyzed. I mean,
he's fucked up.
It's a weird thing at the end because he's like too jovial at the end. Yeah. But he's fucked up. He's had his leg bitten off.
Which,
and his wife was raped and murdered on their wedding night.
Brutally.
Like, this is a dark Bond film.
It is. And Felix is like Bond's number one dude. So I feel like this movie has the emotion that On Her Majesty's had at the end, which where you would kind of want to see that spill over into Diamonds, right? But you don't really get that.
Right.
This movie has that. Like, Bond is pissed. Somebody has fucking killed his best friend's wife and put him in the hospital where he may not live. And he's unhinged at this point. And they try to take away his license to kill.
And he fully goes for it.
He fully goes for it.
There's no holding back.
And there was a point I was telling Matt when we were watching this, where they take away the license to kill, and you're thinking, okay, so you saw a little bit of kind of rough around the edges Bond here, and once they take away that license to kill, this is where they're going to get around him not being brutal. That doesn't fucking happen. They kill another dude that's a friend of his. He comes out of the thing, and he's like, what's this, Chubbs, right?
Sharky.
He goes, Sharky sends his regards. Shoots a harpoon right through that fucking guy. I
fucking love that scene.
And this is one of the most iconic endings to a villain in any movie ever. He lights the fucking guy on fire, dude. He burns to death. One thing that I didn't mention on the last podcast, which a lot of people bitch about, and I agree, the fish winking at the end of this movie.
What? Yeah, it's a very stupid ending.
What?
That makes no sense.
Okay. Here's my
theory. For the tone of this film, that makes no sense.
Here's my theory on this. There's two things at the end of this film that make no sense. And I look, I'm not mad at your selection. I love...
No, you had it up there.
Yeah, I had it up there. I love License to Kill. It's a great film. I love the revenge tale. The other thing about License to Kill that I think doesn't get mentioned a lot is there's some Bond films where they don't want James Bond to be James Bond. So they do other things.
Sure.
This film feels like the opposite. Where they're like, let's take James Bond and drop him into a different environment.
Yeah.
But they retain the aspects of the character that make it work. That's why I think this works. The two things that don't work at the end of this film, they're like, we had this really gritty, dark drama for the last 2 hours. But then Felix at the end, Bond calls him.
He's too jovial.
He's too happy. His wife just got raped and murdered, and he doesn't have a leg. And Felix is like, hey, James, let's go fishing next week. It'll be great. And it's like, that's weird. And then at the end, they have a winking... a winking fish statue in a pool. It's very strange. But I think it was like a producer's thing where they were like, we don't want our Bond film to end like on a downer note. Like, we're James Bond. This is happy. I get it too. They didn't really know what to do with it. It doesn't work for the film. I wish they just went full dark with it. This film should have ended with Tim lighting up a cigarette, drinking a whiskey, just in a bar somewhere, being like, what the fuck just happened?
I agree.
That's how this film should have ended.
Or walking away lighting a cigarette with an explosion behind him and he doesn't look back because he's too cool for it.
Full Arnold Schwarzenegger sort of thing. Absolutely. Yeah. Something like that. But unfortunately, they couldn't go fully there. But I agree with you. It's an amazing film. The ending's a little weird, but it's a great film.
You know, the thing about Timothy Dalton as Bond, ultimately, I'm with you. I think Connery is my favorite Bond, but... For me, he's really up there because I feel like if you read about how the book interpretation is of this character, and you've read the book, so maybe you can correct me on this. I feel like the movies he was in and the way he acted is the most like Bond in the books.
Yeah. It absolutely is.
Very close, at least.
And that was very intentional. Tim read, when he took the role, he read, he's a method actor. He was like a London stage actor. He's really into his craft. He read all the books and he said, I want to, you know, act out Bond like the books.
Yeah.
And he kind of nails it. Bond in the books is really cynical, really dark, kind of hates everybody. He's not charming. And Tim's not really charming. He is a womanizer, but, you know, he's not like charming ladies into the bedroom. He's just trying to get the mission done. And I do think Tim absolutely nails that aspect of Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different. but it works. And especially for the, like, I think it really works for the late 80s too. It's sort of like darker action driven time for films.
Sure.
Tim's Bond really worked in that yeah. setting. He's sort of Daniel Craig before Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
We're on to number three, Matt.
Oh my gosh, Goldfinger. Number three for me.
I can't argue it.
Yeah, it's such a quintessential. It is the quintessential Bond film. If somebody came to me and said, I want to watch a James Bond film, I would say, okay, how do you feel about movies from the 1960s? And if they said, fine, I would say, how do you feel about Casual Rape? And if they said, fine, I would say, all right, Goldfinger is for you.
Like, rape is ever casual.
Just, you know, yeah, like little yeah. How do you feel about some really problematic scenes?
You've now said the second thing since you've been doing these podcasts with us that's going to ruin your political career.
Oh, my political career is done. I'm going to come to death and have problematic things. And it's all bad at this point. My congressional run is out the window.
But unless you run as a Republican.
That's true. If I run on, like, the Trump ticket where I'm just like, I didn't say that. No, but you did. Like, nope.
Yeah, I didn't. On the Republican ticket, I mean, like, these things are great.
Sure. Welcome to the political podcast.
To be fair, coming to death is great no matter what political spectrum.
Honestly, I stand behind it. If you gotta go, that's gotta be one of the best ways to go.
Of course.
So anyway, but like, yeah, Goldfinger. Goldfinger to me is the, well, I think to a lot of people, it's the quintessential James Bond film. It's the one that established the formula. I think it is probably Sean's best performance.
Yeah. This is the one your dad always quotes, Goldfinger.
Yeah, and how can you not? It's so cool.
We probably watch it the most.
What is that he says?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
He says, no, Mr. Bond, I expect some casual rape from you tonight.
Where does the dog come from?
That's from Skyfall.
That's Skyfall.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This has, to me, one of the best, if not the best, villains in the series. I think Goldfinger's wonderful. Amazing locations. It's the movie. It's one of those weird things where it's like, it's not the best, but it is the most iconic, and everybody remembers it, and for a good reason. I think everybody turns in an amazing performance. The sets were wonderful, the score is wonderful. Sean's killing it. Oddjob's awesome. You mentioned the golf game earlier. This golf game should be boring, but it's actually tense and interesting.
Yeah.
The biggest knock against the movie, and it's incredibly fair, is that Bond doesn't do much in this movie.
Right.
He's a captive for most of it.
Except rape.
Except for the rape. He's very there for the rape. You know, the reason I think I ranked it this high, if I was ranking objectively, like films objectively, it'd be lower. The reason I rank it this high is because this is a film I throw in all the time. I watch this movie like 3 or 4 times a year.
I think the laser scene is probably one of the most iconic scenes in any Bond.
Oh, for
or
sure.
Or in cinema.
Yeah, the, do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to
die. Yeah, so what I just told you, Emma's dad quotes all the time.
Sure, everybody knows that scene. Everybody, like, I think a lot of people know the golf scene, the Aston Martin DB4 is in this.
Oddjob.
Everybody knows that. Everybody knows Oddjob. I said earlier for...
Pussy galore.
I said earlier for You Only Live Twice, an iconic movie does not make a good movie, and I still think that is true, but... I still think this is a good movie. It's a dated movie. It's got a lot of problems. It's great. It's super watchable. It's short.
It's in my top 10, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I love short movies.
Honestly, so do.
They're my favorite.
No, honestly, I do too. I think keeping a movie kind of like down in length is an okay thing. But I go back to this one so much. It's so iconic. It's so classic James Bond. I think it's wonderful.
Okay.
That was three. Number three for you.
Three for me is Casino Royale. Not the original. We don't even count that.
Oh, that's the one I thought you were talking about.
There's two?
1967's Casino Royale. Yeah.
I'm confused.
No. The first one with Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
It's one of the best openings to a Bond film I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's in black and white. He's kind of getting his stripes. You don't get the gun barrel until he like fully becomes a 00,
yeah.
Which is very clever. I love that. The chase scene in the beginning is fantastic. Daniel Craig kills it in this movie.
Yeah.
The cards game is fantastic. I really don't have anything bad to say about this. And two and three were kind of interchangeable for me. And so...
Well, I know what your one and two are now, so...
That's all I can say as far as that goes. But yeah. Casino Royale is definitely fantastic.
That is a... It's a I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Shall I get my number two?
Yes, sir.
My number two. By the way, my number two and number three go back and forth. And I would say I think they're the best double feature in Bond. My number two is From Russia with Love.
Okay.
A great film. The gypsy scene is really strange, as you said.
Yeah.
It could be taken out entirely. But that was, again, the product of his time.
Sure.
The producers went there. The director went there. They saw gypsies and they were like, hey, what if we had like ladies fight in a gypsy camp? And somebody, presumably very drunk, was like, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. So that's a little strange.
Isn't gypsy a non-PC term?
Uh-oh. Okay, in 1963, that was not a thing.
Aren't we supposed to call them like Romani or something?
They were called that in From Russia with Love. They were called Romani.
Not according to Tyson Fury.
Yeah, well, does he say he's a gypsy king.
His handle's Gypsy King, yeah.
Who's going to argue with him?
Exactly.
But I think From Russia is an excellent film. Everybody always says it's the Alfred Hitchcock Bond film. And I have to say, I've been on an Alfred Hitchcock kick lately, watching a bunch of his films. And I think this is actually better than a lot of Alfred Hitchcock films I've seen. Some of those are a little rough. Some of those are a little dated. I enjoy it thoroughly, especially once they get on the train. I also like my Bond films to be a little bit simple. I like spy stories. And this kind of nails that.
Sure.
The scenes with Red Grant, I think, are excellent. It drags a little bit at the end. The gypsy scene's weird. But ultimately, it's an excellent performance from Connery. He's just full charge here. I love his allies. I love the villains. Red Grant's amazing. I could just watch this movie over and over. Even when I was a kid, I could just like put this on anytime.
When you were a kid, more inappropriateness.
Well, I was watching these when I was like six. Like, that ship has sailed.
That's crazy.
That's why I'm so messed up. Don't let your kids do this.
Well, I grew up on Steven Seagal films, so what does that tell you?
Hell yeah. That's why we're friends now.
That's exactly it, yeah. Number two for me is Skyfall.
That's what I assumed.
Here's the thing. It's not a formulaic Bond film at all. But I think this arguably has the best villain in the entire franchise.
It's a great villain.
It's up for debate for me, but fuck, dude. He's so good.
Silva is excellent.
The story is so personal. You really have to see Bond kind of pick himself up. The cinematography in this is second to none.
It's the best in the series. It's gorgeous.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
There's so many shots. When we were watching this for the podcast, I was watching this on my screen, and there were so many shots where I was like, I gotta pause this and just...
It's breathtaking.
Look at this shot that they did.
You can take a screenshot and like hang it on your wall and it would be awesome.
It's beautiful.
The theme song is great, as Emma has pointed out.
Yes.
I just, you know, this just really nailed it, man. And it really like brought this story to a more personable level. And it's terrible that they like... Drop the fucking ball with Spectre after this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I feel like the follow-up to this... And again, like I love Skyfall. I ranked it lower than you, but I still adore it.
Yeah.
But I agree. I feel like they really dropped the ball. The follow-up to this could have been so much better.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a product of Sam Mendes coming back, and he did not want to. So they should have let him go. They should have brought in a different director. But, you know, it is what it is.
The Home Alone aspect of this, too, is great.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It bothers some people. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because it only lasts like a minute. I would actually compare it to Roger in Octopussy, where everybody's like, oh, we only think about the clown suit. It's like, well, that's 1 minute of the film.
Sure.
And I understand you don't like the film. I understand it's or not you, but it's like people. Like, it's a silly film. But the Home Alone aspect, it's like, well, that lasts 2 minutes.
Sure.
And then we're just back to Daniel Craig machine gunning people. Like, sure. It's not a big thing.
Sure.
I think Skyfall is completely excellent. I love it.
Well,
I have a great time with it.
We're here.
Yeah. I know you're number one.
Of course.
And I know yours as well. You know mine because I've said it.
Yeah.
My number one is Casino Royale. And it was not always Casino Royale. When I saw, you know, I was obviously a big fan when it came out. When I saw Casino, I was totally off Bond. In the theaters, I mean. Die Another Day completely made me not a Bond fan. Not a Bond fan, but like made me disinterested in this franchise.
Yeah.
My dad and I went to see it, Casino, as we always do. And we walked out both going like, that was interesting. That was like pretty good. Hey, that might have been really good. But it took me years for this to settle as my number one. And then there was like 1 week about 5 or 6 years ago where I watched Casino, From Russia, and Goldfinger all in the same week, which are like always my top three. And I was like, oh my gosh, Casino's a masterpiece. Like, that's number one. And it's been there ever since. I think it's perfect. It's to me, it's a lightning in a bottle Bond film. The score is perfect. Daniel Craig's performance is perfect. The story is amazing. It takes all of the Bond elements out, and yet it still feels like a Bond film.
Sure.
It's the opposite of Live and Let Die for me, where it's like, it doesn't really feel like a Bond film, but it's not fun. This one takes a lot out. We don't have Q, we don't have Moneypenny, we don't have gadgets, but it still feels so Bondy, and the story's perfect. The climax is a poker scene, which, again, should be super boring, and it's not. It's riveting. And I think it's all down to Martin Campbell. Martin Campbell directed both Casino Royale and GoldenEye, and I think he's the GOAT, pound for pound, because he gets Bond.
Yeah, because I'm going to echo that sentiment here, because number one for me is by far GoldenEye. Mm-hmm. This has everything you could ever want from a James Bond movie. And it's Pierce's introduction into the role. They had written this story with Timothy Dalton in mind. Yep. And it shows. Because as the other Pierce movies go on, it really steers away from this tone. Which, there's not a ton of silliness in this. It's a lot more serious. I guess you could argue the dick face who's the hacker in this.
Dick face?
Yeah.
Oh, Alan
Cheese Cullen. Dick?
Yeah. You know, maybe he's a little... Boris. Yeah, Boris. He's a little silly.
Yeah.
But the villain is Sean Bean, fantastic.
This is mostly a very serious Bond film.
Again, yeah. What you get here is like the Man with the Golden Gun, where he's kind of Bond's equal in every way.
Very much so. That fight scene at the end is incredible.
Yeah, but you're getting a better constructed film around this, right? Whereas that kind of held up the entire, which I didn't even talk about in The Man with the Golden Gun. And then you got the J.W. Pepper fucking chase scene in that, which was terrible, which I hated in Live and Let Die, right?
Yeah, we both agree that J.W. Pepper, not great.
No.
No, probably the worst Bond character.
With this, you get it all, man. Yeah. You get just Pierce being a fucking badass. The one-liners, you get the gadgets. Bond in a tank chasing guys down the street, dude.
Great chase.
Bond playing chicken with a train in a tank. Oh, my God. What else can you ask for, dude?
That scene is so good. And the score. We should talk about the score. The score is terrible for this film.
The one downfall.
Except for that chase scene, which is wonderful. Classic Bond. They had a different composer.
Right.
And it was very classic Bond. It's wonderful.
The only shitty part about this is the score.
Yeah, totally. I love GoldenEye. It's an all-time favorite.
A lot of vagina, the henchwoman, or I know that's not her name, but it sounds very similar to Austin Powers' one.
I was just going to say, isn't that an Austin Powers?
No, her name's Anya. Zenya on the top. I mean, come on.
Played by Famke Janssen, who played Jean Grey.
Her finishing move in this is fucking guys to death.
She literally finishes guys and herself and then kills them.
Yes.
It's a little strange.
When she's machine gunning everybody in Russia, like she finishes, off. Dude. Yeah. She comes at least three times.
Oh, for sure. And
then when she dies, she gets squeezed in between the trees, and Pierce is like, Pierce? She always did love a good squeeze.
She always did love a good squeeze.
And I love how she wraps her legs around him, and she's trying to finish. She's moaning and screaming.
And Pierce
is slamming her against all the walls because he's losing all his breath, right?
I'm just going to say this. Pierce is our last Bond that had a full rug of chest hair. I'm just saying, for the next one, we need to bring that back.
Yeah.
Because if that becomes a thing again, I will start killing it.
And I just love the line delivery when he finally gets her off. I think he burns her ass cheeks, right, on something. And
he
throws
her
off.
like a sauna or something like that.
Pulls out the gun, and he's just like, no, 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 no. No more foreplay. He cocks the gun.
Take me to Giannis.
So many great lines, so many great action scenes, so many great gadgets, so many great chase scenes. Pierce is fantastic. The Bond girl is okay. She's not bad. She holds up.
She's good.
The villain is fantastic. We get a new M in this, played by Judi Dench.
I think is the
Which is the best. GOAT.
I love Judi Dench.
She's better than the original.
I agree. She's the GOAT. I love Judi Dench.
And I love how they play the aspect up of Bond being kind of a grizzled vet. Yeah. And, hey, we're doing things a different way here, you know?
I think we mentioned that on the podcast that, like, in GoldenEye, they sort of have this way of writing his character where it feels very lived in. Like, he's been around for a long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He has allies. He's been doing this for a long time. He's not a young guy like Daniel Craig in Casino. He's the vet. Which yes. I love. It really lends itself to the character.
Yeah, because you can kind of believe this is the same Bond from License to Kill and Living Daylights and the other things.
It also helps that Pierce was a little bit older at the time. Sure. He wasn't a young guy. He wasn't old, but he was 40 when he started.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps the character.
So, next year sometime, probably after No Time to Die,
yeah,
we'll revisit this and we will fit No Time to Die in this list.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, hopefully we can check some of these out again and have a new perspective on it, but
I plan on having rewatched every Bond film by then.
Well, of course.
So, but I do that normally. That's just my weeknights.
So, any final thoughts, Matt?
This has been amazing. James Bond is the greatest film franchise of all time. Now that I've started rewatching Marvel, I feel especially confident saying that because Marvel is terrible.
What about Fast and Furious?
I love Fast and Furious too, but you know, it's not even close. Star Wars is embarrassing. Marvel is a cash grab. Fast and Furious is really cool, but no. James Bond is the greatest franchise of all time. If you haven't watched James Bond because you think it's too old or stodgy, give it a chance. And I look forward to coming back after No Time to Die and talking about it. We're going to talk about it after we see it, and then we'll redo this maybe next year.
So there it is. That was our top 10 James Bond films from 2021. Will our opinions change? Most certainly, because as you said, your opinions change all the time of these.
Yeah, I really drive that home, and I'll do it again, which is that I love all these movies so much that two things. Ranking them for me is not like a linear progression. It's not like I think 24 is the worst thing I've ever seen and number one is the best thing I've ever seen. I kind of love them all. And it is true, if you ask me day to day, my opinions will be slightly different, especially in those middle movies. Like, my top five and my bottom five, I'm like relatively consistent on.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, it's really hard because it just depends on the mood I'm in.
So one controversial pick, I guess, I have in my top 10 is I have Thunderball at number 5. Mm-hmm. I really liked that movie a lot. I don't know why, but I don't know. I felt like at the time that was my favorite of the four, but I've really grown to love Dr. No a lot. But I want to give From Russia with Love, which was still in my top 10, another look, another chance. The same goes, I mean, I still love Goldfinger too. These are very tough. I mean, they're all right there. License to Kill, I just fucking love. I know your dad hates me for that, but
not as much as he hates us for liking No Time to Die. Oh, spoilers, we like No Time to Die.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, I don't know if this opinion will change, but GoldenEye is the perfect James Bond film for me.
Man, I just watched GoldenEye. I watched it on New Year's Day. I was viciously hungover, and so I laid on the couch and watched GoldenEye. And that movie somehow gets better for me every single time I watch it. It's kind of a perfect Bond film. So I'm with you. From Russia with Love was super high for me. I think it's probably gonna very hard to knock that movie off of my top spot. That's been one of my favorites for a very, very long time. You know, just glancing at my top 10, I can honestly say it's gonna change, but it's mostly gonna be the order that changes. Because my, you know, at least my 8 or 9 of those films are so set in my brain as the classics to me, like the ones I love. That it's going to be very hard for something else to break into the top 10, but I think one or two things probably will, and some stuff will fall off, and you know, that's the nature of taste. It just changes over time and the mood that you're in, and but generally speaking, there's going to be some movement, but probably nothing crazy. I ranked Dr. No number 8 here, and I don't even know what I was thinking, because that's I like Dr. No significantly more than that.
I have a number six.
Okay.
The lone Roger Moore film I have in my top 10 is For Your Eyes Only.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's going to change. I feel like I want to give Spy Who Loved Me, which I had 12, another chance, or not chance. I still have it ranked fairly high for this list, yeah, but
right.
I don't know. I feel like I want to give that another look.
Absolutely.
Maybe I didn't give it its due diligence, but
yeah. And I think we're both coming at this list from a perspective of we generally enjoy these movies.
Yeah.
So even when they're bad, they're good. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Pizza and Sex. Spy Who Loved Me was fifth for me. I don't know where it'll end up next time, but it's not going to be too far off that.
Yeah.
I had For Your Eyes Only number six. I love that movie. OHMSS, I had number seven. We're going to see about that. I watched it recently and I enjoyed it, but
I had it nine.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah. License to Kill was my number 10. Love License to Kill. This is hard for me. I love all these movies. I'm not going to knock any of these.
No doubt.
Casino Royale being my number... What was your number one was GoldenEye, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Casino Royale was my number one. We'll see how I feel after a full series rewatch, but man, that's a tough one to move for me. That movie occupies a place in my heart that is just really tough to move
on. It's interesting, too, with Daniel Craig's run, because two of these movies, I think, are in both of our top 10, which is Skyfall and Casino Royale.
Yep.
And I have those two and three. And then you've got fucking Spectre.
I know.
Which is kind of the middle of the pack for me. And then Quantum of Solace just, you know, way down the list.
Yeah, I had Quantum of Solace at 21. Spectre at 16. And I think both like Spectre, but then it has that moment where
it falls apart.
It just falls apart, and it falls apart in the most spectacular fashion.
It does. It's almost similar to Living Daylights in.
Very similar.
It starts out really great, and yes. then it just falls off a cliff.
Yep, absolutely. And the bit that's good is really good.
Yes.
But then it gets bad, and it's like, whoa, that's really bad.
Yeah.
The Daniel Craig films, man, like I'm looking forward to us getting to those, because it's actually been a long time since I've done a rewatch just of those movies. I've been focusing more on the classic films. I will always give them an A for effort, but really all over the place in quality.
And as you know, as we wrap this podcast up, the thing I wanted to expand on with James Bond and where it's at now, I do think they are legitimately having a tough time trying to keep this character relevant in today's day and age, because this character, it's kind of a symbol, and it stands for a lot of things that people don't really necessarily like in today's Hollywood right now. The term toxic masculinity, I guess, gets thrown around often. I don't know if you would say that this is toxic masculinity. Maybe definitely in some, I mean,
I think some of those
early Connery films for sure.
Yes.
But it's for sure masculinity.
Yeah. And it's important to remember with the toxic masculinity of the early films that they've been lampooning themselves on the toxic masculinity since like the 70s anyway.
Yeah.
Like, they've always known those early films were a little problematic.
Sure. And they did kind of nerf that with Daniel Craig's run, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I think,
to an extent, they started that with Pierce, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, there's that great speech in GoldenEye where M calls him a misogynistic dinosaur, a product of the Cold War. A
sexist, HR nightmare.
He's definitely an HR nightmare. That'd be a funny thing to call him in the new one. You're just an HR nightmare, man.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Pierce goes on to sleep with like eight different women in that movie.
That's true.
And they say it, but then they just go back on it immediately. You know what? I would respect the hell out of them if they just...
went for it.
If they just went for it.
Why the fuck not? Because that's the thing. This character, though, you can't turn this into a woman.
No.
It's not going to work.
They've already said they won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to have a certain edge and a certain manliness to keep the spirit of the character.
Yeah, it's the character. Look, Bond, we should be very clear about what Bond is. It is the male fantasy character. He gets the ladies. He sleeps with women all over the world. He saves the day. He drives the nicest cars. He drinks the nicest wine, the nicest scotch. He stays in the nicest hotels. He wears fine suits. It's ridiculous, but it's male fantasy stuff.
And that's the thing, too. Like, they got rid of the slapping of the women and the borderline rape.
Which we support.
Yes, 100%.
That's bad.
Yes, but...
but you can do all that without doing the rape and the slapping.
And I think that's the part they're struggling with, is how do we make this character for 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, I would respect the hell out of them if they just do it. I mean, if they look around and say, well, all this milquetoast stuff that everybody else is putting out is flopping.
It's not working.
It's not working. Let's try something different. Yeah. Let's let Bond just lightly slap one woman. Wait, I got it. She identifies as a man. It's fine now.
Problem solved.
Bond 26.
Produced Get on by, it, Eon.
Produced by the Daily Wire.
So that's it. I hope you enjoyed this look back, and we will start these Bond episodes probably in the next couple of months, and we'll see you next week.
Can't wait. Bye.